Insurance Work Group. We've been formally approved by the Leadership Council, and so we are a work group equal to other work groups in the Cantera Initiative. And the purpose of this call is to introduce everyone to Cantera, to our work group. Pete Palmer will be doing an identity assurance overview, and then we'll have a speaker on the call talking about an actual implementation. So with that, my name is John Fraser. I am one of the co-equal co-chairs. There are three of them of this group. I'm with a company called MedNetWorld.com in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Pete and Rick, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Pete Palmer, and I'm with ShareScripts and the information security manager for the company. And co-chair of this new group. This is a follow-on to our identity assurance SIG for healthcare with Liberty. So we're really looking forward to moving forward under the Cantera umbrella now.
And hi, this is Rick Moore. I'm with eHealth Ohio and also a co-chair.
Great. Well, why don't we, and Rick, you're recording?
I am.
Okay, so if we could have people introduce themselves, that would be great.
Well, I'll start. This is Dave Minch. I work with John Muir Health out in Walnut Creek, California, and I'm actually your speaker later on today.
Hey, welcome, Dave.
This is Kyle Metters of Prima Group, and we're involved with the certification effort that Liberty had and what Cantera will be having going forward.
Great.
I'm Mike Kirkwood with Polka. We're an application developer and an interoperable application from the consumer point of view.
I'm Alan Engelberg. I'm with CFC, and we're involved in healthcare integration, information exchange, and a number of different areas, and I'm trying to look at how, from the perspective of identity assurance, identity management within the solutions we offer.
Great, welcome.
My name is Tom Smettinghoff. I'm actually a lawyer with the Wildman Herald Law Firm in Chicago, and I co-chair a identity management legal task force in the American Bar Association. So I'm interested in learning what you folks are doing and how it might dovetail with what we're doing.
Excellent.
Hi, my name is David Staggs. I'm also a lawyer, and I'd be interested in hearing about the previous speaker's work. I work for SAIC, but I've been a consultant for the VA for about 5 years, and I have I'm a co-chair of the Cross Enterprise Security and Privacy Committee in OASIS, which has a couple of profiles that describe the communication of authorizations between healthcare enterprises, which has now been incorporated into the Nationwide Healthcare Information Network, the NHIN, and demonstrated several times. So I'd be interested in seeing how that could dovetail with your work.
Right. Others?
This is Shelley Gold, and I'm also with CSC, work closely with Alan Nagelberg, and met Rick Moore at the Michigan Day on Capitol Hill. Of course, very interested in the role of identity management in HIE and HIT solutions.
Great. Others?
I'm Mick Talley. I'm program manager with Helen Hill of the Southeast Michigan Healthcare Information Exchange. Brett McDowell of the Cantera Initiative showed up in Washington during Michigan Day. And as Brett knows, the Southeast Michigan Healthcare Information Exchange used the Liberty Alliance, I get confused, Cantera Initiative framework in developing our policy agreement, and that was noted in Washington. Helen Hill is the primary rep to this group, and I'm monitoring while I do an X9F1 encryption call, so I'll be bouncing back and forth.
Thanks, Mick.
Welcome.
Other? Okay. With that, Why don't we, Britta, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I am Britta Glade, and I am staff with Liberty Alliance. So I'm here, and I'll be on some of the calls, but not all of them, but just help with any procedural issues or anything like that. And I'm always on email for anything I can help anyone with.
Thanks, Britta. Okay, well, I'll kick it off then. My name again is John Frazier. If everyone can open the first PowerPoint, I just have four slides, a little bit about Cantera and the healthcare work group. That was the first attachment on my first email, and then the second attachment will be our third speaker. Anyway, so this is the one that is 2009.10.22 kickoff intro.pptx. People have that open?
Got it, John.
Okay. Well, a little bit about Cantera on the second slide. It was founded April 2009. Actually, that's our work group, and Cantera itself, too, were in that time frame. Its trustees, you can see on the list, are quite a few names, both U.S.-based and internationally. AOL, British Telecom, CA, Fidelity, some of the big names you already know, Internet Society. It's also Liberty Alliance has helped sponsor the Cantera group. And Britta, will it be folding in completely into Cantera at some time?
Yes, that's the intention by end of year.
By end of year, okay. Novell, NTT, I believe NTT is the Japanese telco, as well as Oracle, PayPal, and Sun. So a very strong alliance of organizations coming in to build Cantera, to bridge and harmonize identity community efforts, help ensure the secure online interactions between people using the identity assurance framework. This hopefully will enhance personal privacy. And I think the big thing about Cantera is it's trying to build bridges between the other, all of the identity management solutions like OpenID, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with, the Liberty standards that are already out there and in use, InfoCard, and other identity management solutions that are out there so that we can build essentially a infrastructure, not only for healthcare but other industries, where we can start reusing identity and trusting online identities more than the username password environment we have today. On the next slide, a little bit about the Cantera Healthcare Work Group. We were founded in August 2009. As Pete Palmer said, we were the Liberty Alliance Healthcare Work Group before. And so we've been transitioning, it's been somewhat of a slow transition, into the Cantera initiative, and again, this is our first kickoff call. The purpose of the Healthcare Identity Assurance Work Group is to implement a reference implementation of patient access to medical information and healthcare information, again, using Cantera solutions, which are, you know, the OpenIDs, the Liberty Alliance standards, and those other standards. We also want to implement a reference implementation of some type of healthcare worker identity management. And the use case we've been discussing is for day-to-day usage, but also for emergency usage. If you think about what happened down with Katrina in New Orleans, there was a requirement there that healthcare be able to log into multiple systems after their hospitals were destroyed, and that infrastructure just didn't exist. So that's one of the use cases we want to look at. We also want to review and endorse some identity assurance frameworks so we can trust the identities that will be provided through this new infrastructures, and also provide that kind of recommendations to the NHIN infrastructure and health information exchanges so they can reduce the number of username password systems and start trusting these online identifiers across systems. We also want to review and endorse patient identification standards for online usage and also card identifiers. So to the extent that people start using cards to identify patients, can we have standardized identifiers that would link back talked about the current co-chairs, myself, Pete Palmer with Surescripts, and Rick Moore with eHealth Ohio. And on that slide, I have our homepage at Cantera and also our charter, if people want to look in detail at our charter. Won't have time today to cover it all, but it's online. On the next slide, just a little bit about the different technologies that we'll be looking at, OpenID, the existing Liberty standards, InfoCard, other technologies that people could bring up even on the call today. The audience of this work group is the NHIN committees and infrastructure being built today in the U.S., health information exchanges, both in the U.S. and internationally. We can help inform and educate them about these standards. Of course, HL7, HITSPE, and other groups are both national and international groups, and so we can help them understand this technology and with our reference implementations perhaps move that down the road in the standards groups. We are also planning to work with other work groups at Cantera, the Identity Assurance Work Group, Consumer Identity Work Group, and the Privacy and Public Policy Work Groups for obvious reasons. They really overlap healthcare, especially when you look at the patient, patients in healthcare. The other thing is everything that we produce here is going to be covered under our Creative Commons license that we've agreed to under this work group. So our work within the work group has to fit in that Creative Commons policy. And if you have any questions about it, I would recommend you go to our work group website and you look at our Creative Commons license that's on the links there. Then just the last slide before I switch to Pete Palmer's talk. It's a diagram of the way that this could work. If you look at the bottom, you see that patients need better logins and simplified logins to multiple systems, clinics, you know, where they may have their primary care. If you think of Google Health, Microsoft Health Vault, they're also now vetting users and identifying them and storing healthcare information. And the explosion of iPhone and similar smartphone apps will want access to that same information from patients. And that's going to be the high volume usage that hopefully we can educate, inform, and build reference implementation to make that an easier you know, login experience and a better security and privacy environment. On the right-hand side, you see health information exchanges that are built between hospitals, clinics, payers, personal health records, that then through NHIN gateways can talk to this soup of other connected groups, both in the U.S. And potentially internationally in the future. And healthcare workers will benefit from having simplified sign-ons, again, whether it's Liberty Alliance standards, OpenID, or other systems. So with that, are there any questions about the group, or should we just move on?
Are you going to include in your audience maybe IHE, that organization, and their IHE Connectathon? That might be a good group to target as well.
Yeah, that's a good good input. Our company is, year before last, was involved with the IHE and IHE Connectathon at HIMSS, and so we're a member of that. We can reach out and invite people into this process, absolutely. But also I want everyone to understand that this is an open group, so all of you can invite others directly. As long as they agree to our Creative Commons policy, and obviously then they can just click and join right on our website. So it's not through me that other people or our other co-chairs that other people can join, but they can just join directly. So I'd recommend that other people reach out to other appropriate groups.
One other short comment. You might consider the NHN Connect group, which has reference implementations, and also health open tools at HL7.
Yes. Okay, great.
Quick question on the model. This is Mick Talley. What's the difference between the HIE gateway and the MedNet gateway?
You know, I apologize. I should have taken the MedNet name out of there. I was editing this quickly. That's just a generic NHIN gateway, and it could be the open source Connect gateway. And the idea of the NHIN gateways, which there is the open source reference version available, is that that connects HIEs to HIEs. So I think in our group, we won't be dealing at that level. We'll be dealing at the bottom of the slide level where patients would log into their clinics and other systems, and healthcare workers would log into to an HIE, in a sense. Because, as you know, most healthcare workers have logins at their work site, but especially if you look at providers, they often have to log into hospital systems where they have privileges, and they might practice in several locations. And public health, as you know, has a number of systems, both locally, statewide, and federally, that healthcare workers typically use, whether it's CDC, state public health. And so these kind of systems can simplify the lives of healthcare workers, getting access to all those different systems. So with that, why don't we move forward? Pete, do you want to take it from here?
Yeah, thanks, John. Hi, everyone, and thanks for joining the call. We really appreciate it. My presentation, you'll see, is just a 2009-10-22 IAF, then it's the HIAWG.PPT, if you've got that open. And these are actually Brett McDowell's slides, and he's the executive director of the Cantera Initiative. I just did a little bit of editing and added a couple slides of my own on here, but this is the kind of the official deck to describe the identity assurance framework. So with that, I'll just read off the slide name as I get there, and I do want to go kind of quickly because I think a lot of you know most of these concepts anyways, and I want to hopefully get the most out of Dave's and Rick's presentation later. So with that, we can go to slide 2. And there's just kind of in the physical world, that's the dilemma, and that's pretty much what my wallet looks like when I unload it. So you can see where, all the different IDs for it, one each for each application or each business or whatever you've got there with credit cards and bank cards and so on. And if we go to slide 3, there's kind of the online, corollary to that, where, we all have separate IDs for all the different service providers and so on that we use online. So it's, it's called the collection of identity silos here. So moving on to slide 4, we've got what does the user want? Okay, and we all want a simplified online experience and, again, get rid of all the user, multiple user IDs and passwords and, all the post-its that some of us may have laying around with the different information that makes it kind of less secure, which, of course, leads to the protected personal information to, reduce the risk of fraud. And then, as John was alluding to as well, as these things evolve, we want better product and service offerings, in the advent of Web 2.0 and, devices and things like that. So really what we're striving for, and I'll get to a kind of a more academic description of the goals in a minute, but it really is just simply to have an online ID that represents, each of us and that we can reuse. Moving on to slide 5, this is kind of a legacy thing here. It's central provider. It's been kind of tried and it's never worked. And so there's never going to be that one, similar to like the Motor Vehicle Association in each state where they, provide the pretty much the de facto ID. You don't have anything like that online, and nor has any attempt been successful. So what we've learned is, different organizations will be issuing IDs. And the way to kind of move forward with interoperability is, you know, we've got the federated model here that's shown on slide six. But really that just kind of shows where what we want. We want different organizations to trust the IDs that are issued by other organizations. And that's a nice goal, but it really is how do we get there? And so kind of a historic analogy is on slide seven, and that's kind of the evolution of the ATM. And again, starting with separate cards with each bank, you had to go to your bank and your card didn't work at any other ATM. And then the, you know, proprietary networks of banks started popping up where they were trusting each other's ATM cards. And now we've got just, you know, an ecosystem where, you know, for example, I could take my Wells Fargo or Citibank or whatever ATM card. And in my example, I remember using it on a trip in Amsterdam and was just, you know, that was my first, you know, like, wow, this is great. I just pop my card in and get my euros out, and it's just like being at home and walking down the street. So that's really how, you know, kind of a, you know, the analogy that we're looking for you know, an online identity that we can use pretty much anywhere. So those are kind of the goals, and here's the requirements for the interoperable assurance. And this is where we're going to start using or get recognizing standardized terms that you'll see: a credential service provider, that's the ID issuer that does identity proofing, credential lifecycle management, and operational criteria for trust. And that last one is pretty important. Then the relying parties, those that are relying on that, the credential to be, you know, that they're assured that it really is who the person says it is, they are. So, you know, those are, and you can see here, assesses the risk of an application, complies with best practices, and so on. But I'm going to kind of jump ahead here. The two problem areas, we all recognize that, the technical interoperability.
Slide nine,
yes, thank you. And then the operational interoperability and assurance. So that's really what the focus of this is, and of the framework as well. So if we move to slide 10, you know, we start getting the concepts down here where we've got the authentication technology, and kind of at the center is the credential service provider that's been that behaves in a way that is known. That they can be assessed against, and that everybody knows how they're doing their business and the reasons why they should trust the IDs that are being issued by any given provider. And really to achieve that, all CSPs should be using the same rule book. Okay, so everybody, if they follow the same policies and procedures when issuing and managing credentials, then that would enable the relying parties to be able to trust those, because they know exactly, it doesn't matter who the CSP is, if they're accredited as, you know, as being in compliance with the issuing and management rule book, you know, lack of a better word, then they've got have reason to trust those IDs. And that's kind of where, you know, we kind of, so why the need for a common standard? That's exactly why. And so I want to kind of jump ahead real quick for the sake of time to slide 13. And this is the stated goal. This is, you know, been the wording that's been vetted through Cantera for the goal of the activity. So the end goal of this activity is to provide public and private sector organizations with a uniform means of relying on digital credentials issued by a variety of identity assurance providers, or CSPs, in order to advance trusted identity and facilitate public access to online services and information. And then the second one is interoperability of e-authentication systems, mutual acceptance of rules, policies, and supporting business processes is critical to the cost-effective operation of safe and secure systems that perform essential electronic transactions and tasks across industry lines. So that's it in a nutshell. That kind of describes why it is that, you know, years back, we all kind of set on the goal to get this common framework for issuing and managing IDs. And we're at the bottom of the hour. I think if we jump ahead to slide 16, you can, you know, look at these slides and see some of the detail. But really, the federal government and Cantera have all kind of agreed on these assurance levels. There's four of them that, you know, the example of, or the description of which are on slide 16. And so once you've got an assurance level, it would be how assured is the relying party that this that the ID that's being presented for authentication, how assured are they that this is not fraudulent, that it really represents the individual or the organization that's presenting that ID. So you can see we've got the AL1, 2, 3, and 4 there. And the reason is because you don't always need to have that super-duper high, you know, level of assurance for things like national security and so on. So you can look at the description of assurance level 1, and it might be something as just registering for a news website. And really, there's not much at risk there if really is not the person who's purporting to be that person. So, you know, that's where you get the assessment criteria, and the identity proofing here is minimal, self-assertion. And the credential, a PIN or username password, might be sufficient for that, or is would probably be sufficient because of the minimal risk that's involved here. But then they go up, you know, it's a gradation here, and you do get to, you know, assurance level 4, which, as you can see, you know, an example would be the dispensation of a controlled drug or $1 million bank wire. Well, here, yes, there is a lot at stake, okay? So you really want to make sure that the criteria for issuing that ID is as strong as you can, you know, possibly make it. And then the credential that goes with that would be something that would be incredibly hard to commit fraud or to have a fraudulent credential on that. So that's why you get, you know, the hard token with crypto and, you know, maybe even biometrics and so on. So that's kind of the thinking here and how and what went in for defining the framework. And the work's been going on for a number of years, and it started out with the Electronic Authentication Partnership, and then the initial draft of the framework was then adopted or picked up by the Liberty Alliance, and more work was done. And now we've evolved to the kind of the next phase here, and that's with Cantera. So the version 1.1 of the framework is published, and so that is what the criteria would be, or the rule book that I referred to earlier, that identity issuers and managers, the CSPs, have to follow. And let me just kind of, I could have swore I put an example of the criteria in here. But if not, you can go to, if you go to slide 17, this, you know, the identity assurance framework is a little bit over 100 pages, but it's broken down into the different assurance levels so that if I'm the CSP issuing at any given assurance level, I have to follow the criteria and be audited against that in order to be certified. So if I want to be certified as issuing at assurance level 2, then all the different rules for AL2 are listed in the framework document. And here's just like an example for security event logging. I would have to prove that I maintain a log of all security relevant events concerning the operation of the service and so on. And then configuration management, I have to demonstrate that I do have a configuration management system that includes version control software for system components and timely identification and installation of applicable patches and so on. So those are just examples of some of the rules in the rule book, which is the Identity Assurance Framework document, that any CSP has to be in compliance with. So now we, you know, have reason to trust IDs that are issued at the various assurance levels. And finally, jumping to slide 20, the reason result is an identity ecosystem. And I apologize for racing through those, but that really is just an overview of what's what we've got with the framework. But again, it is approved and published, and the program is running for certification for CSP. So that's really good for our group, because this is the identity assurance framework is what we want to see health information exchanges and RIOs and so on adopt as their standard for issuing IDs at the various assurance levels. Again, the common rule book, and that will allow interoperability within RIOs and HIEs and interoperability within the NHIN. And that's really our goal for our work group. So I think that's it. Are there any questions?
Well, I have a question. So this is David again. So when you talk about rules for CSPs, how does this fit in with the work done by CCHIT? The certification by CCHIT of, like, EHRs.
Right. Okay. Well, as you know, the CCHIT, they get their kind of their rules from the HITSBI efforts. And so there is a security privacy a technical committee that some of us on the call have been participating on and off over the last, couple of years. And where that we have introduced this to HITSBI, to that technical committee, on a couple of occasions, and that's actually one of our goals, or it's actually one of my personal goals, is to have this be included. And I kind of have a long-winded answer to that right now, but I just suffice to say that we're going to advocate that HITSBI adopt the IAF work as the standard.
Good direction. Thanks.
Any other questions for Pete? Okay. Well, Pete, you must have explained everything quite well. Thanks very much.
Thanks, everyone.
Next on our agenda, we have Rick Moore as a moderator, and he'll be introducing our final speaker. Rick, do you want to just jump in?
Yeah, very quickly. I do want to thank everyone for coming to
Rick,
the call.
You may be on mute.
Oh, yes, I'm on mute. Thank you.
There you go.
I do want to thank everyone for coming on the call, and I especially want to thank Dave Minch for speaking to us today. Especially to thank Dave because Dave is in Maui at this point on vacation, and I believe it's 6:30 in the morning right now. So
it's
truly duty above and beyond the call of duty. So I have had the great opportunity to meet Dave through HIMSS and have participated in a number of the committees that he has been on, and I think one of the things that comes to mind when I think about Dave is the word insightful, because every committee that I've been on, he always seems to have the great questions, he has great summations to the issues, great understanding of the industry, and he has great ideas for solutions, and I think he also has the best jokes, so I do appreciate him coming. He is currently working with the state of California on their statewide health information exchange, and he's actively advising them in the process through his participation as the Security Committee co-chair for the California Privacy and Security Advisory Board. And I think one of the things when I think of California, I always think of them as leadership and a leadership state for the rest of the United States. And I think in all things related to the HIE, this will probably be no different. One of the most important things that they're looking at currently are best practices for our health identity assurance. And, of course, that's very important to us. And one of the best practices that they have selected just recently is to require any remote access to be NIST Level of Assurance 3, which I think is certainly beyond the scope of most of the HIE efforts right now, and certainly as you've seen through Pete's presentations, the level that we think is important. But I think it also is a necessary goal if we are to secure the protected health information over the health information exchange. So I'm hoping that California will also find the Liberty IAF framework as an important part of their HIE effort, and I'm hoping that Dave will continue to join us for these calls. And so in light of that, without further delay, here's Dave.
All right. Well, thank you, Rick, and aloha to everybody from sunny and warm Maui. I imagine those of you scattered across the country have probably a little cooler weather than we have right now. I'm just going to jump into the presentation, and I'm going to speed through most of it, which simply is talking about California. I probably ought to mention at the outset, my real day job is I manage for John Muir Health, which is a small IDN out in Walnut Creek, California. I manage our HIPAA and HIE implementation projects, so all of the HIPAA privacy and security falls under my jurisdiction as well as our HIE efforts. I'm also a member of the California eHealth Collaborative. Actually, I'm one of the founding members of that collaborative organization, and we've been working very closely with the state of California as it's struggling through its process to get organized. We formed the eHealth Collaborative actually back in February of this year, and it's been an interesting ride. So the state of California, and I just opened with my first slide, the mission of the state of California is to dramatically, emphasis on the word dramatically, improve safe and secure provider and patient access to personal health information. If I go to the second slide, you'll see that in today's health, the California health, e-health environment, and this is really true throughout the country, so it's certainly not unique to California. We've pretty much got poorly and underfunded efforts both with HIEs and EHR adoption, and consequently has been very slow. ARA is bringing a lot to the table. It's kind of interesting as we see that all of a sudden the national landscape now starts talking about EHR adoption as if it were extremely simple, and HIEs as if they were just, snap your fingers and it can be done. There's lots and lots of experts around now that didn't seem to be there before. One of the things that we've been promoting in California, and I'll talk about this a little more later, is really leveraging the adoption that we already have. California has got, it's a fairly large state. We've already got 20 HIEs and 70 provider organizations with EHR adoption projects underway. There's a lot of learnings there, and one of the things we're going to try and do is really move very rapidly using the learnings from those organizations to see if we can't bootstrap what we're doing throughout the rest of the state. If you go to slide 3, it'll give you a little bit of a picture of what we have in California. There's actually 22, and now since we did this slide a couple months ago, it's now 24 because there's two new HIEs that have popped up, or local HIOs that have popped up. But we've got four organizations that are quote, statewide. We've got four organizations that are national in terms of the visibility of these organizations in California. And then we have 9 operational and 11 planned, and now it's actually there's 2 more that are in the planned column. So lots of HIOs and HIEs that are popping up in California. Our unique challenge is, if you go to slide 4, we've got 90,000 physicians, 65,000 of them are actually active in patient care. I read one statistic that said that California's got the highest EHR adoption rate of 20%, I believe the article said. And so I called a friend over at Kaiser and I said, okay, let's talk about numbers. And of the 20%, I think at least 15 of that is probably simply the Kaiser organization having adopted their electronic health record. So statistics are a little misleading in that if we look at the underserved and the 7,500 to 11,000 Medi-Cal-oriented physician practices, the adoption is extremely low, as it is in the community clinics and the critical access hospitals. So it's a pretty big state with some pretty interesting challenges. If you actually go to the next slide, this is one of my favorite slides. We had a big debate in California, it's probably 3 months ago now, that we should have a single statewide entity, and there's an organization, CalRIO, that's pushing to be the sole statewide HIE, and so we put together this slide, and I just kind of think it's fun to look at. We're probably a little bit too big to have a single statewide health information exchange, and part of it is simply because California is so diverse. As you can see, those states that have statewide health information exchange, like Delaware and Idaho and Maine, essentially are equivalent roughly to some of our mid to larger sized counties. And then, those with regional HIEs like New York, we equate that to about six counties within California. So, again, like I said, this is kind of a fun slide. Our vision is essentially one, I'm on slide 6, of looking at California right now, we have a unique opportunity. We have the opportunity to actually, I think, create a very, very much a world-class health information highway for essentially the benefit of all of California. And this extends beyond the range of just the hospitals and the physician offices, and it extends all the way out to the patients, to the citizens of California. I'm quite interested in what the Cantara Group is doing, because it's one of our big, and it's something we've talked about a lot within the state. It's a big issue right now, is how we actually reach out and encompass all of the citizens, all of the individuals. We've talked about the DMV records and the license, and our DMV in California actually issues ID cards, as I think a lot of them do, for people that aren't drivers. But then we talked to DMV and we found that they estimate, by their own estimate, there's probably roughly 2 million people in the state that don't have either one. So it's a very interesting problem, and I'm certainly looking to somebody who has a lot of intelligence in this area to give us a good solution to it. At the end of the day, meaningful use, which is what, of course, we're all striving for as providers, it's ultimately going to be determined essentially by improved outcomes, not the amount of dollars, incentive dollars that we receive or anything else. We're going to determine meaningful use by how many patients we actually help. If the next slide slide 7 just kind of goes through the California HIT&E. This is Health Information Technology and Exchange. We've kind of merged the two. The objectives, and you see right up at the beginning, it's ensuring patients having safe and secure access to their personal health information. So we feel that this is an extremely important objective for the state of California. Slide 8 gives you a little bit of the timeline. We actually started in December 2007. The governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, formed the Privacy and Security Advisory Board, I actually am a co-chair of that, of the security group of that board. In April, we actually appointed our own health information technology czar, Jonah Froelich, and since then, we've had a lot of things happening in a very rapid succession. I'm not going to read them all off to you, but the ones that are in purple are the ones that we're still waiting for, but like I said, it's been an interesting ride. If you go to slide 9, the California governance model that we've really adopted is, and this diagram is one that was produced by MNAT in the National Governors Association had them do a study across the country of different statewide governance models. And California is really looking at a public-private partnership to actually operate exchanges and to oversee the health information technology implementation throughout the state. Let's see, slide 10, the PSAB, Privacy Security Advisory Board. This just kind of gives you a little bit of the status. There's 5 committees to this board: the Security Committee, the Privacy Committee, Education, Legal Committee, and then one that was formed relatively short time ago, actually a couple months ago, which is the HIO / E committee, that one being composed of people that are actually operating or part of exchange, health information exchange activities in the state. Essentially, we've got a pretty open and pretty solid process for moving forward and moving the privacy and security agenda forward in the state. Slide 11, just one comment. It's interesting that the HIO committee, one of the first things we asked them about was consent, and their immediate reaction was that California just doesn't have enough trust mechanisms in place to allow, the term was used was less conservative consent approach, and this really was talking about more of a fine-grained approach to fine-grained approach to the development of consent models. So we've kind of ended up with a pretty simple opt-out model for provision of services, provision of healthcare services, and then looking more deeply at how to develop a more fine-grained model in later phases. But these are some of the other points that the HIO committee came up with. In slide 12, talking about the operational planning factors, we're in the process now. We've set guidelines for both privacy and security for the state HIE efforts. And those guidelines presently incorporate HIPAA and ARA, and also some of our local alcohol, drug abuse, patient records, and other local requirements of the state. And we are also looking and have incorporated, in fact, NIST and some of FIPS and the NHIN core services. Also looking at and just talking with the Department of Veteran Affairs and DOD about some of the requirements that we may have to incorporate so that we can interoperate with those organizations. The next slide, 13, is just kind of a, this is one that every time we think, every time we actually get confidence and we know what we're doing, then we look at this slide and then we kind of, you know, just pops the balloon and tells us we don't know what we're doing anymore. These are all the federal programs that we actually do have to coordinate with. The state of California does to actually carry out its mission for the HIT&E department. And the slide 14 is just the other ARRA programs that are also going on in the state that we are also trying to coordinate with and develop a common landscape for security and privacy across all of these different efforts. Slide 15 is where is really the meat of what I guess I wanted to really talk about with this group, because it's what we're actually, where we've actually gotten to at this point. And it's where I see our efforts and the efforts of Kantara actually starting to help one another. Access control, we've actually made a couple of statements. The first is for internal access, we want, this is for, again, people who are using health information exchange, if they're within their organizational boundaries, we want them to be using NIST Level 2 at a minimum. and NIST Level 3, if they're outside their organizational walls. So if they're actually they're actually tied in with a VPN or some other mechanism for actually being outside of the organizational control. And this would be pretty much anything going over the open internet, open wire. And we've adopted a attribute-based authorization mechanism based on policies and for enforced policies, and we've actually used a paper that Mike Davis, who works for the DOD down in San Diego, Department of Navy, I think.
It's VA, yeah.
Yeah, VA.
The VA, no, actually this is a different Mike Davis. As it turns out, there's two Mike Davis. but he's come up with this idea of what he calls CBAC, but it's really enforcement of the arbitration process at the data requester location, so that essentially the information that comes packaged in the XACML message has already been essentially run through the policies. And of course, you can, I'm sure everybody's thinking about how in the heck would that work. The board feels that this is the right way to go, so now we're kind of left with trying to figure out how we actually make it happen. We've got some other interesting issues that we're dealing with, or issues that we've got under our implementation focus right now. Collection limitation and California versus federal law is always a fun discussion when we get into that. And, of course, HIE consent. Slide 16 really talks a little bit more in detail about the access control discussion. For authentication purposes, a single entity can use Active Directory or Oracle Internet Directory or whatever other secure directory services that they choose for their identity assertion, but we're asking those organizations to adhere to a NIST Level 2 as far as establishing the identity of the individuals. In addition, there are guidelines call for using strong passwords and strong password management controls, and those are called out in more specific detail in the guidelines. And, of course, using NIST 3 dual-factor authentication for anything outside the physical entity boundaries. Authorization across entity domains must be accomplished using federated authentication. And if an HIE is going to adopt, and this took a little bit of time to get everybody collected and heading in the right direction. If they're going to adopt a federated model for authentication, they've got to abide by the California Office of the CIO standards that they have chosen for federated identity management. And I've put a real quick recap of those in slide 17, and I won't go through them in detail, but you can see that we're really looking at the WS Security and WS Trust. So again, very interested to talk to this group about those standards and how that works with the Liberty Alliance Circle of Trust, one of those model. Let's see. The next slide is again talking a little bit more about authorization. The approved attributes that we've come up with right now are the data source, the role of the requester, the sensitivity of the data being requested, the entity the requester is working for, and the use of the actual use the data is to be put to. Right now, because of the incremental way we're going about developing the guidelines and the implementation strategies, we've really just chosen to move forward with help right now for exchanges, exchanging only for the purpose of provision of health care. So essentially, the opt-out provision will cover provision of health care, and then if you're going to use any other use of individual health information, you're going to require an opt-in with some specific guidelines. And we're looking at using the HITSB, at least, and this is all work in progress, so we're looking at the HITSB TP30 construct for actually moving, establishing and moving consent around. And let's see, I think that's it. The last slide gives you a couple of references. The CHC.org is the eHealth Collaborative's website, and the HIE.ca.gov is California's website for the HIE. It's part of the California Department of Health and Human Services. Excuse me. That's about it, and I'm just about out of time, but I'll take a couple questions.
What's your policy on reuse of your slides in other presentations? Can I steal some of this information?
Sure, no problems. Just give the eHealth Collaborative a little credit.
Hi, this is Shelley Gold with CSC. Quick question. You had that comparative chart between the size, scale, complexity of California versus the other states. Has your eHealth Collaborative exchanged lessons learned or ideas with other eHealth Collaboratives in other states?
We actually talked to the New York eHealth Collaborative and borrowed liberally from them with their permission to get our eHealth Collaborative started. And since then, we have been contacted by and we've talked with a couple of other states, eHealth Collaboratives in a couple of other states. We've been really focused heavily within California on a couple of things. Number one, just getting our own HIEs together collectively to talk and share experiences. And then, of course, advising the state on what to do.
Thank you.
We're happy to share with anybody and everybody.
I just want to let everybody know we've reached the top of the hour, and Dave, would you entertain any more questions?
Sure.
And so if...
It's,
folks would like to ask a few more.
It's only 7 o'clock my time, so I'm just getting ready for my second cup of coffee here. Any other questions?
I have just a clarification question. Did you say you were using HintSpy constructs to move consent management data?
We're right now just getting started with the implementation strategy, and the HintSpy TP30 construct is the one that essentially deals with consent and different levels of consent. The TP30 can be very, very detailed, and we aren't expecting to go to that level in terms of the attributes within it. But we're certainly, at least at this point, and this is all in progress. We're looking at that as being the methodology that we want to adopt.
Thank you.
This is David again. I think that sounds like a great idea. TP20 is also something that you might want to look into. I know Richard said that they make presentations to the spy group, the security privacy infrastructure group of HintSpy, and you might take note that the first week of November they're going to be meeting in Silver Springs.
Cool. First week of November.
Yeah, the other component is C19, that's the identity assurance group or assertion component too. So all those three are real focuses.
There's another NHIN standard for exchanging patient preferences or patient security and privacy preferences. I don't know if it's based on one of these things, but we should look into that one as well.
One thing that we're looking at is the XSPA, the OASIS SAML XSPA, and we've studied that and are moving down that direction as far as adopting that as a framework as well.
Speaking as the co-chair of the XS and the founder of the XSPA, TC, and OASIS, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, if you look at our OCIO standards, and the Office of CIO has adopted very heavily the OASIS, the WS specifications, how do you see that interoperating or relating with what the Liberty Alliance specification requires? I went through, and I'm not as familiar with the Liberty Alliance, but I went through, and there certainly seems to be a lot of commonality to me, but I haven't studied it in extreme detail to see if there's some gotchas in the lower levels of this stuff.
So before Rich comes in and makes the point on the federal on Liberty Alliance, Rick, Dave, let me just mention that the EXPA folks have focused first on XACML for description of attributes and how you can make policies which would allow or deny access. Then they focused on SAML, which is the envelope which allows exchange of those attributes across the across between enterprises. They also focused through HL7 on development of a systematic semantics and an information model that allows the exchange interoperatively, and that's the result is EXPA. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. We haven't really touched on WS Federation, but we have a profile for WS Trust, and we're going to be working on that too, as well as making a international version of EXPA, which relies on ISO and ITU standards. So it's, I'd be interested in seeing how that fits in with the Liberty Alliance as well.
Excellent, excellent.
Well, listen, everybody, we're over our hour. I appreciate Dave speaking on this important topic, and especially, you know, talking about what's happening in California. Rick, did you want to have any final notes here?
No, I think it's been a great discussion. I think the ideas are just right in alignment of all the things that we are hoping to accomplish through the Healthcare Identity Assurance Group, and so I look forward to the future calls and working with everyone.
Well, great. Thank you very much, Dave. At this point, I think we'll probably close the call. I would ask people to join the Cantera Initiative and the Healthcare Work Group. It doesn't cost anything. It does cost to join Cantera, I believe, as an individual or as an organization. But you can join the work group without cost. So this is our first call. Thank you, everyone, for joining. Please do join the work group. Get on the listserv so you'll get at least the notices of the future calls. And I think if it's okay with Rick, we'll probably do another call 2 weeks from today, and which is what we did with our previous group every other week. And we'll send out a notice to that effect. And I think we'll just continue the conversation on the security attributes, what other organizations and groups are doing, and start getting our arms around what we should be doing in this group around setting up our reference implementation, which, again, is the goal of the group, to create a reference implementation that people can play with and use, and we can educate the community on. So with that, any final questions or comments from anybody?
I would like to thank Dave Minch again for getting up so early and giving us the presentation for California. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
You bet. Next time I'll be a little bit closer to your end of the continent.
We'll buy the drinks the next time, okay?
Sounds good. Well, thank you, everyone.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.